This is the IBJ Podcast for the week of January 13th, 2020, brought to you by the law firm Craig DeVault. I'm Mason King.
At this year's Consumer Electronics Show in Las Vegas, the latest developments in 5G technology are presented by a range of companies across various industries. 5G technology has moved beyond telecommunications and is penetrating into industries like media and mobility.
What is 5G? It's the next generation in wireless technology. Now, these are short millimeter waves that broadcast more data more efficiently.
How is 5G still the story? I feel like we've been waiting and waiting for it and really yet to see some real fruition come to the table.
Well, I think it's an evolving story, but it continues to be an important one.
Welcome back to the podcast, everybody. So we're all familiar with the term 5G, right? We know it's a wireless technology. We know it's better than 4G. We know information on the network will move super fast. Our phones will work better. Battery life will be longer. Download speeds will be faster. But really, this is just the tip of the iceberg. And I don't know about you, but I have a harder time following the story when the inventors and entrepreneurs and academics try to explain why 5G is going to transform people's lives and their businesses and society as a whole. Now, fortunately, Indianapolis will be ground zero for some of these innovations with the creation of the Indiana 5G Zone. Scheduled to open in mid-March, the zone will provide a high-tech laboratory of sorts for developing and testing 5G products and applications. It's the product of a broad-based collaboration between area businesses, academic institutions, and government entities, and it's expected to lend itself to industries and market sectors where Indiana is particularly strong, such as manufacturing and agriculture. Now, you may have heard that Central Indiana already was way ahead of the game in terms of paving the way locally for 5G and installing the infrastructure. So this facility could give the state a big strategic advantage in this transformative technology. Now, to help with developing a basic grounding in 5G tech, and then to discuss what we can expect from the Indiana 5G Zone, we have two guests today. I'm joined by Sean Hendricks, Director of Emerging Technologies and Partnerships for Purdue Research Foundation, and the Managing Director of the Indiana 5G Zone. Sean, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you.
And we're joined by Bill Swords, the President of AT&T Indiana. Welcome, Bill.
Thanks for having me.
Guys, we hear a lot about 5G. I don't think a lot of people really understand it, other than having a vague sense that your phone is going to be able to do things faster. So if you don't mind, let's start from the consumer's perspective, which in this case happens to be me. I just got this new smartphone that I showed you a moment ago. It replaces the one I've had for 5 years. This is the latest model from the manufacturer. It's enabled for 5G. Service provider happens to be AT&T. But in most places around the city, I appear to be getting a 5G signal. Now, in simple terms, Bill, what does it mean for me as a smartphone user?
Well, so the G really stands for generation, right? We've gone through about every 10 years, we go through a generational change of wireless technologies. 1G networks in the late 80s, early 90s were all about analog voice calls only. And then 2G networks brought about the first use of data into cellular networks, and we could start texting. 3G networks really brought about a little bit faster. It was the era of BlackBerries where you could check sports scores or some very simple weather websites. And then 4G networks is where consumers really started to see a difference in speeds, particularly, where we can watch videos and stream news shows and things of that nature. And 5G, which is generation, these fifth generation networks, you're absolutely right, they will be a heck of a lot quicker. But there's some other attributes that are lesser known that are equally, if not more, transformational about 5G networks.
In 30 seconds, what are those aspects?
Probably the most transformational is actually latency. Latency is that delay that happens when you push something on your phone, and that signal, that command, actually goes back to the cell tower, into the mothership, gets processed and does whatever it's supposed to do, goes back out to the antenna and to your cell phone. That is latency, kind of that round trip travel of that command that you have given it. Today, on a 4G network, it might be 50 to 60 milliseconds. That sounds pretty darn fast, and you think, boy, okay, so what's the difference? On a 5G network, it's actually going to be 20 milliseconds or lower. There's actually things that businesses can install called edge computing, which is a subject maybe for another conversation, where you can take that latency down even further. But it's that near real-time latency that will allow us to use these wireless networks to do things that we've not been able to do before.
Now, when I'm at work or at home, I'm automatically connected to either my work or home Wi-Fi. So for the standpoint of phone usage, how is 5G different from my Wi-Fi?
So in terms of just making regular phone calls, you're not going to see much, if any, difference at all over 5G. 5G is really more about the data experience of the network than it is voice. But today, the vast majority of consumers, believe it or not, they're making voice calls over a data network.
Now, if I go to other cities, am I going to get 5G service just because I have this 5G-enabled phone?
So there's a lot of different phones with a lot of different capabilities. The phone that you're carrying is actually not a 5G device. It is a 5G evolution-enabled device. And so Sean and I were talking just before we started, Mason, that one of the interesting things about 5G is for the first time in our history, the networks are existing before the devices are. So 5G networks are actually popping up all around the country. Indiana and Indianapolis has really been a leader in that space, but there are not a lot of consumer devices on the market to take advantage of that today. Those are coming in a big way in 2020. AT&T offers one device right now, which is a Samsung cell phone that is a true certified 5G phone. 5G Evolution, which is what you have, is the latest and greatest Apple device. You can't buy anything nicer than the phone. Kudos to you on your selection, by the way. But that device in downtown Indianapolis can get 300 megabits per second on it, which exceeds most people's residential broadband.
So I shouldn't feel cheated.
Oh, no.
Because that's what I thought was a 5G device.
Absolutely.
Okay, great. Now, when we talk about how wireless providers have been rolling out their 5G networks, what does that mean from an infrastructure standpoint? It's a different kind of equipment.
It is different equipment. One of the things I'll say about 5G networks is they're a lot more software intensive than hardware intensive. Here we are sitting in a traditional old telephone company building where there are mountains of equipment that have been replaced over time with much smaller equipment, and there's a lot more software that replaces what the hardware used to do. The same transformation is happening with our wireless networks. That's what 5G is all about. And so as we're deploying software, we're also hanging new radios to a certain extent, new radio spectrum, but it's the software that's being rolled out that's enabling a lot more of these functionalities, whether it's speed or latency or other features.
But you have to have all new, what I'm going to consider to be transmitters. My understanding was that instead of having like traditional cell towers every couple of blocks, now you need to have like little packets.
Yeah, great question.
In more places.
So there are small cells is the trend, sure. And so to further illuminate and confuse you at the same time, there's actually at least two different flavors of 5G. There's 5G that will come from the 200-foot towers that will travel miles. We call that low-band 5G. And then there's high-band 5G that only travels feet, like a city block. And those come from the small cells, particularly that you see deployed downtown Indianapolis and around central Indiana. You do need to have both. Yeah. Used to be able to serve a community by a tower out by the interstate. But as people have cut the cord from their home, we used to use our telephone in our home and we used to use our cable line. Now we're using the wireless networks for so much, the antennas have to get smaller and closer to where the users are to be able to support that increase in traffic.
I think you alluded to Indianapolis is a special case when it comes to the adoption of 5G. What happened? Why was that?
You know, starting in 2015, the Indiana legislature recognized the importance of wireless, I think, to our economy and to all aspects of the state. And when they've passed legislation almost every other year to make it easier and conducive to building antennas, getting the permits that are needed, and so forth to deploy this infrastructure. It's just been great cooperation, I think, between civic leaders and the business community. Across all providers, Indy's really become an early deployment of 5G networks.
As I recall, and correct me if I'm wrong, it was really one or two cities that developed infrastructure quickly.
July of 2017, Indianapolis and Austin, Texas became the first two cities to roll out the first versions of 5G Evolution.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Let's take a quick break to hear from our sponsor. This is the IBJ Podcast.
The IBJ Podcast is brought to you by Creek DeVault, a trusted and dynamic law firm representing a wide variety of local, regional, and national clients. Committed to each other and to every client, Krieg DeVault prides itself on integrity, professionalism, respect, and excellence. Financial institutions, global manufacturers, national healthcare providers, and successful organizations of all sizes and market focus rely on Krieg DeVault to create innovative and successful business solutions. Connect today at www.kriegdevault.com.
All right, we're back with the IBJ podcast. We're talking about 5G networks and the soon-to-open Indiana 5G Zone with Sean Hendricks, its managing director, and Bill Swords, the president of AT&T Indiana.
Now, Sean, let me turn to you. Now, 5G isn't just about mobile devices, right? It's also about stationary devices. What does that mean?
Well, the way I like to think of 5G is that it's really about enabling the digitization of all the technologies that we think of today as being physical technologies, manufacturing technologies, utility technologies, agriculture technologies, and so forth. So really bringing a networking capability by putting a connectivity component to all of these physical devices which help us to monitor and see what's going on around us. And so while the use case, while the function and the data will be very unique from every manufacturing plant that uses the 5G-enabled device, every traffic light or city utility, fundamentally what we're doing is we're connecting all the things in our world that help us control and provide information to us. And then 5G is kind of the fabric that stitches that information together and then helps us understand and become a lot smarter about how to interact, control, and use the things in our physical world.
So a lot of people say that 5G isn't just like the latest generation of wireless service. It's not an incremental improvement. It's really like a quantum leap. It should be considered revolutionary. So going from 4 to 5, I mean, what is the evolutionary advantage?
Right. The revolutionary advantage in 5G is the speed. We talked about that already. We talked about latency. But the other area is in the capacity of the network. So think about your own home today. You know, 5, 8 years ago, maybe you had a laptop, a couple cell phones. In my house, my family, I stopped counting at 25 devices once I got connected. So think about that case, your individual life, extend that to your neighborhood, extend it to an urban environment like downtown Indianapolis, and we're seeing massive, massive connectivity. Now think about what happens when an event happens in the state. So you have a major traffic accident and everybody calls their friends and says, I'm gonna be late, right? You get this phenomenon called network congestion, right? Maybe you have to wait until you get a signal, your data's delayed, et cetera. So that's how we experience network congestion today. We don't think about it that way. We just think everybody's trying to access the network. Well, now when we move into a space where there are literally billions of devices across the world connected, the network has to be architected from the ground up. We can't just add some more channels, add some more spectrum. We have to fundamentally rethink how we do wireless communications. And 5G is really the time where we allow that massive connectivity to take place.
Now, I know the example of being able to download a movie faster. Mm-hmm. Like, I can download The Dark Knight now in 5 seconds or something.
It's great, right?
Yeah, I guess. If I had time to watch a movie. Give me some more examples of what 5G allows us to do that wasn't previously possible.
I like the theme of transforming our physical world. And Indiana being the type of state that we are, manufacturing is something that a lot of people understand. And so to the common user, we think of manufacturing, you know, putting things together down a line and out comes the widget out the back end. But now think about being able to, as we're building this thing, this widget, being able to capture images of this thing, make real-time adjustments based on the images that we've captured and transmitted back to the network, used machine learning algorithms to find out that, hey, this widget, the color is off, the dimensions are off, and all this can happen in real time. So whereas we may have a quality system in the old days that would detect this at the end of the line, it would send it as a reject, and then we'd have a certain scrap rate. In today's technology or the 5G world, we would detect it at the instant that it happens and automatically correct real time or near real time and prevent it from happening to the next device down the line.
So having this faster, more complex communication system basically allows this major computational advance.
Computational power happening in near real time.
Yeah.
Right. And you're making, you know, think about this. And I like to think of 5G in a manufacturing environment as really going directly to the bottom line of a factory operator. If you can stop having scrap and you can make adjustments to your process immediately or near real time, that goes direct. That's money saved. That's parts, bad parts that aren't built.
So that's some of the stuff that we know. My impression is that 5G also can be thought of as kind of a technological frontier that still needs to be explored, that there's a lot of potential that we don't know about yet.
Yeah, and that's great. So there's the things we can think about, and there's the things that we are just now beginning to be able to wrap our heads around. And the example I like to use there is virtual reality, and maybe even more importantly is augmented reality. So that low latency characteristic that Bill mentioned earlier is very critical for the virtual and augmented reality uses, because it turns out that your brain can process images at about a rate of 7 milliseconds. So what that means is that if you can get the latency of a VR environment down to below 7 milliseconds, your brain can't tell the difference. It doesn't know whether you're in a real environment or a virtual environment.
And for folks who aren't familiar with the phraseology, what is virtual reality?
So a lot of people think of virtual reality today in the gaming world. Virtual reality for what I'll call productive purposes is an incredible possibility. Think about training of people to do complex technical tasks. Take something like an engine mechanic. What if you could train somebody literally in their home, in their rural small town, or wherever, and you could put them into a virtual environment? You don't have to invest in thousands of dollars and hundreds of pounds of tools and parts and things to work on. They can work in the virtual environment over and over and over again, training themselves, being trained. And they can also introduce problems into the virtual environment that are very difficult to replicate in the real environment.
That brings me to the Indiana 5G zone. How does its mission fold into what we've just been discussing here? Why is there an Indiana 5G zone?
When I think about Indiana, I think about physical things, you know, manufacturing, agriculture. That's what we're known for. This is the opportunity of the Midwest. Indiana also has its own technology hub. We have manufacturing technology. We have academic research universities. So when you start to look at where 5G is going to be most useful and where it's going to be most transformative, you see Indiana as really having the ingredients to be successful. So when you take that view, it becomes pretty straightforward to say, yes, we need to focus ourselves and we need to align our efforts around the and collaborations around the topic of 5G.
So who would be using the Indiana 5G zone?
So the 5G zone is a couple of different things. So one way to think of the 5G zone is a place where companies, universities, startups can come and can network together, execute projects around 5G technology. So you can take device companies working with network companies, working with data analytics companies. It can be a physical place. The 5G zone, though, is really meant to be more than that. It's meant to be a network of companies and organizations so that we can extend our reach in Indiana out into the rest of the 5G ecosystem across the country and across the world.
So it sounds like startups, you mentioned, schools, universities.
Exactly.
Government agencies, is that right?
Yeah, I mean, 5G is as transformative for the government and the federal space as it is for the commercial and consumer spaces. So Department of Defense, Department of Homeland Security, Department of Agriculture, and Department of Interior. Think about 5G technologies to help manage wildfires out in California.
Now, how is this different from what we consider to be like an incubator?
It's not just a place where companies go and sit together and there's a couple startups and maybe one major anchor company. This is a place where companies will come to actually do work, to do projects. The core of our 5G zone is an AT&T 5G base station. This base station is one of only two that exist outside of the, call it the industry laboratories that AT&T has. This is important because this is a key piece of technology that allows companies to bring their devices and their technologies and to interact with a real network, a real 5G network, in a way that is difficult for them to get access to without going directly through the larger companies.
So my understanding is that at least one of the missions of the 5G zone is to support developing applications in some very particular industry sectors. You mentioned manufacturing, for example, agriculture. Smart cities, what does that mean?
Smart cities. So think about that as intelligent traffic control, controlling your stoplights, but also think about it as the utility infrastructure, the water infrastructure, the electrical infrastructure. Think about being able to be aware of water problems before that water main breaks and shuts down traffic or turns off water to houses for 2 or 3 days.
How about national security?
National security, that's a big one. It's really everywhere. One way to think about it is the Department of Defense is not going to have their own separate 5G network. And so the DoD is going to have to learn and develop techniques and strategies for operating over commercial networks. Well, what's that mean to them? That means that they have to be able to interface with these networks, but they have to be able to do so in a security level that's commensurate with defense applications. And that's a whole new set of technologies.
So, Bill, why is having a facility like this in Indianapolis a big advantage for Indiana?
Well, for a lot of the reasons that Sean stated, you and I can't just walk off the street and take a cellular network and turn it up and turn it down and change the frequencies and play with it. Sean is operating a facility, the Indiana 5G zone, where you can go play with it. And there aren't very many of those facilities. And so you may be developing a widget that's going to change manufacturing or agriculture or transportation. And again, that is the core of Indiana's economy. We know that our economy is going to be significantly disrupted by the Internet of Things in the years ahead. Whether we decide to build the technology or just be subjected to it, I think that's why Indiana leaders are seeing that opportunity where we better be a leader in this space because it's going to impact us. And so having a space like that gives those entrepreneurs and those developers a place to go in and tinker on the wireless network in a place that allows that.
So this is one of, I think, two facilities that we know of its kind in the country. I think the other might be in Miami.
That's correct.
Is that right? Why is that? Why can't other cities just do this or have something up and going by the summer?
Well, they're expensive, right? I mean, electronics are expensive and they have to be done in a controlled environment. And Sean in the 5G zone is actually using radio spectrum, and that's radio spectrum that's licensed by somebody. And so we've partnered with Sean for AT&T to bring in the gear, the radios, the antennas, and license them to allow them to use our dedicated radio spectrum. And so there's just a lot of issues that come along with that, from liability to electronics and costs and licensure of radio spectrum. To be able to partner with a world-renowned research institute like Purdue leading this effort at the 5G zone was just a natural fit for us.
Yeah, you mentioned Purdue. One of the extraordinary things about the 5G zone is that its creation, I think, was driven and supported by this incredible array of businesses, academic institutions, and government entities, which I think is known collectively as the Indiana 5G Forum.
Yeah, exactly. So there was a group of industry, civic, government, and academic leaders that got together last June and really came to the consensus that said, 5G is coming, as Bill mentioned, it's going to be transformative. We can assert ourselves as leaders, or we can just wait and see what happens. So that group is naturally got a leadership bent to it. So coming out of the 5G forum, that group of leaders put together the Indiana 5G zone. That was the origination of the zone as an idea.
My impression is having that much kind of buy-in from such a wide spectrum of people or organizations is pretty rare. Is that right?
I think it is. When you can gather together a wide variety of stakeholders and identify and unite around a common theme, that's pretty special. And I think, you know, Indiana has a history of that. The governor and the legislature has seen 5G as a strategic opportunity for the state. And now that academia and the private sector is united around this 5G zone, we're excited about what the future will hold.
Can anybody come in and use this?
So we're open to collaborate with all sorts of companies, academic institutions, et cetera. We do have a membership model. So we do a fee for service based to help offset the costs of this very expensive and somewhat specialized equipment. But yeah, basically we're very open and looking to find companies, academic institutions to come in and collaborate and try to solve 5G problems.
Oh, so how much would it cost to be a member then?
It's not that much. It's $6,000 for a industry partner. It's $5,000 for an academic institution. And we even have a special startup or individual rate of $600.
That's annually.
Annually,
okay,
correct.
Great. What are the zone's startup costs? I should mention it's not exactly done yet. You probably have a few more weeks to go before you open. But what are the startup costs?
So in big picture numbers, the facility is about $1 million to build out the rooms, the labs, and so forth. And it's about another $500,000 for the base station equipment to outfit the testing capability.
And who's paying for it?
So the 5G zone is operating under a grant from the IEDC.
Indiana Economic Development Corporation.
Yep, correct.
Okay, and that's covering the startup costs.
Correct.
But you do have a membership model, so it sounds like you want to be self-sustaining at some point.
Absolutely. So our seed money or our startup funding, we're our own startup, is about 2 years long. And so our goal is to become self-sufficient after that 2-year window.
So a year from now, how do you know whether or not this is successful?
If I fast forward to a year from now in January 2021, what we'll see is a physical space with a base station in place. And then what we would hope to see is we'll see one laboratory space occupied by Purdue University performing cutting edge research with devices and edge computing, as Bill mentioned earlier. We'll have another open lab space where I'd hope to have 3 to 10 other companies operating either independently or collaboratively on projects using the base station as a way to connect their devices and analyze their data and develop their services. So projects is one way to say that. Another element is outreach. So we also want to use the 5G zone as a place to educate the industrial partners that come in. Even some people that play in the electronics and IoT space, 5G is still new to them. So by hosting a number of outreach events to tech forums to talk about 5G, what it means to certain areas of the tech community, that's one area. But we'd also like to reach out to the university environment. You know, maybe public policy is an area that's going to be affected. So imagine people that are pursuing public policy degrees, business degrees, coming to the 5G zone to talk about what does privacy mean in a 5G environment, right? What does that mean from a public policy perspective? So as we're seeing more and more today, technology and policy are really they're highly coupled together. And then really to try to drive being a thought leader. So hosting events, conferences to help the industry come together and align around ideas, projects, and really to try to become a thought leader in those areas of manufacturing, agriculture, defense, and smart cities.
Bill, do you have any in particular hopes for the next couple of years?
Yeah, I mean, we just want to keep the pedal down, right? I mean, we've got a great thing going here in Indiana with supportive state and local leaders, an early edge on networks. By my best estimation, central Indiana is about 6 months ahead of a lot of similarly situated cities around the country. And so we want to continue to build. We want to make sure the use cases are becoming developed so that businesses and consumers in Indiana can adopt 5G. And honestly, it won't be that long, Mason. There's already research beginning on 6G networks, which is probably less than a decade out.
And how so, is that possible?
I know. But, it's the nature of the beast, the evolution of technology, and people are already at the drawing board.
Is it possible, then, that you could be working on 6G stuff at the 5G zone?
Yeah, we may just call it the wireless zone before we're done, just to take that out of the equation.
Wow. All right, well, I'll check in with you guys a year from now. We'll see what happens. Thank you so much for your time, guys.
Thank you.
My thanks again to Bill and Sean for bringing us up to speed. Sorry, so to speak. If you want to learn more about the creation of the 5G zone, IBJ's Anthony Shutley has a deep dive in the January 3rd issue. And of course, you can find that story at IBJ.com as well. And before you get on with the rest of your week, I wanted to tip you off to some stories in this week's print edition. As Indigo continues to iron out problems with the Red Line, it's also considering making big changes to its paratransit service called Open Door for riders with disabilities. Susan Orr reports that the Chicago-based contractor has never met its goals for on-time performance, and Indigo is now mulling major changes, including reducing its service area or bringing it in-house. Also in this week's issue, Greg Andrews reports that a decade after an FBI raid shut down a massive Ponzi scheme engineered by Indianapolis businessman Tim Durham, a lawsuit finally is going to trial that could recoup millions of dollars for the fraud victims. And Anthony Shetley has the story of a recent Purdue student who dug up some long-forgotten technology developed by NASA with expired patents. Ian Hamilton has repurposed that tech to create a revolutionary device that converts heat into electricity with a wide potential for game-changing applications. Again, you can read all these stories in the print edition of IBJ that you, of course, have delivered to your home or office, or you can check them out online at IBJ.com. And remember to have full and unfettered access to all of IBJ's award-winning business content. Just click the subscribe button. Thanks again for making time this week for the IBJ podcast, which is edited by Leslie Weidenbender. I'm Mason King, and we'll be back again next week.